a little bit today. And yeah, thank you for making time on your agenda for the Citywide Tree Project. I'm Roberta Jortner, Morgan Tracy, Stephanie Backman, and Dave McAllister, as we said. And we wanted to take this time to bring the commission up to speed and up to date on the Citywide Policy Review and Regulatory Improvement Project, which we call the Citywide Tree Project.
I'm going to have you lower your microphone just a little bit. There, that'll catch your voice
okay.
A little better.
Is that better?
That's better.
We're in line. Okay, so we have a little presentation for you. We'll be going over the kind of grounding in the urban forest, Portland's urban forest, and supporting policies for this work, going over the origin of the project, where did it come from, why are we doing this project, and the overall process to date. We'll be giving an overview of the proposal that's moving now from the Planning Commission and Urban Forestry Commission into the initial phases of getting ready to go to City Council. And then we want to talk a little bit about the anticipated benefits related to urban canopy and also the costs of this work and how it's evolved a little bit and then next steps. So just to take a quick moment to think about the trees in Portland, they are a defining character of much of the city. They are diverse there in some of our more developed areas, our central city, our less developed areas, our urban forests, West Side Hills. They are part of our neighborhoods and communities. They are part of our streetscapes in commercial and industrial areas as well as residential neighborhoods. They are important to East Side neighborhoods, which are infill areas. These remnant conifer stands are of concern amongst the communities on the east side from the Columbia Slough all the way through the Johnson Creek Basin. We have these remnant native oak and madrone types of assemblages up on the Willamette Bluffs near St. John's. We have just diverse and dispersed canopy throughout the city as a whole. More and more, we're looking as a city at the benefits of the urban forest from public health and safety related to cooling and cleaning our air and water, reducing our stormwater runoff, preventing erosion and landslides, providing habitat. Trees contribute to our compliance with Clean Water Act and Endangered Species Act and Metro titles and the Urban Growth Management Functional Plan. The slide is a little bit cut off, but enhancing the urban forest is identified in the city's Climate Action Plan. Because trees uptake greenhouse gases and help reduce heat island. And increasingly, there's a focus on neighborhood benefits associated with trees in the urban forest, on city blocks, in our houses, helping people to want to walk on streets and frequent our business districts, reduction in stress and crime, quicker healing, shorter hospital stays, and better attention span for kids if they have access to and can even view green spaces and trees. And there are recent studies in Portland showing that there's a positive correlation between street trees and residential property value. And Parks has put together a report fairly recently that estimated tens of millions of dollars worth of aesthetic and environmental benefits generated each year from cities, streets, and park trees, and the replacement value of the whole of Portland's trees on public and private property is about $5 billion. So this project that we're working on, we view as a part of sort of the city's asset management strategy for the tree asset. Tim, can I fix it? It's a little bit cut off there.
It's only the bottom 10%.
Okay, well, we can. There we go.
See, no, that little stand. Yeah. See that little white stand that's for the projector?
I'm ready to call the engineer.
I make it smaller. With the little zoom. With the little zoom. No, that makes it bigger. There you go.
Uh-oh. Now we've done it.
You guys.
Actually, it's one of those ones you probably just have to just barely touch and then it has to warm up.
see now.
Sorry, Roberta.
Oh, that's okay. I mean,
I plugged it back on. It probably just reset.
We're thinking of.
We're very flexible. So, do you have this?
We
can sort of follow
so
along,
the right page, we could maybe and then keep going.
And then is it? You know, it'll come back up or it won't. So, the core policy foundation for this work is the city's urban forest management plan, which was most recently updated in 2004. And the key goals in that plan are to protect, preserve, and restore and expand the urban forest, to maintain support for the urban forest and resources, stable resources, but also, as important, to manage the urban forest to benefit all Portlanders. So there's an equity and sort of distribution of benefits component to it, which is really important. The plan also establishes what we call canopy targets for the city, and those canopy targets are, they vary by land use type, so they range from, say, 15% overall canopy in commercial and industrial areas to 35% or 40% in residential areas. And these are kinds of targets that emerge from national organizations that make suggestions about optimizing your urban development goals and your urban forest goals across an urban landscape. So as you can see, we've been looking at cities across the country. They range in their urban forest, and they also vary. I mean, Seattle's is now, I think I read recently, it's at 15%, 14%. They're experiencing a lot of growth. They vary, and part of that is because, you know, certain parts of Portland canopy is increasing a lot where it's been planted, and then certain areas it's decreasing. And it's dynamic. It doesn't stay static, and it's not going to stay static. We're at about an average of 26% right now across the city, and our goal is 33%. As a whole across the city. So the gap is about 5,000 or 6,000 acres, which is the equivalent of like a forest park. But we don't have another forest park to put, you know, to concentrate the trees in. So where will these trees go? And thinking about the equity goal of the urban forest, we look across Portland neighborhoods, and those are neighborhood boundaries showing on that map, and you see there's a lot of diversity and disparity across the city in terms of the distribution of tree canopy. So you have some tree deficient neighborhoods that we're looking to target. This is an example of how things can change. This is a before and after streetscape picture from Kenton neighborhood, showing how the planting of trees can really transform a neighborhood. And again, like I mentioned, the city has more recently adopted a watershed management plan and a climate action plan, both of which call for expanding the urban forest to achieve the goals of those plans. And then what's coming up next? Well, as you know, the Portland Plan project is underway to look at a lot of different strategic areas. Trees and the urban forest actually cross many of these action areas, but there is going to be a focus on urban forestry. This is the urban forestry background report for the Portland Plan. It's one of, I think, about 20 bits of information that are being brought forward to help inform the upcoming discussions to look at long-term urban form, urban design, and growth management issues for the next 35 years. So that's kind of the context of how we'll be looking at the urban forest policy development upcoming. With that, I'll turn it over to Morgan, who's going to talk about the project.
So, well, I just want to explain kind of where the project origin came from. And essentially, in about 2005, there was a citizen group put together a report evaluating the city's tree regulations and expressing a number of frustrations the public's had with trying to understand the regulations and seeing the results of how they've been applied. And that work was a key influence in some of the action items that were included in the Urban Forest Action Plan in 2007. So in the Urban Forest Action Plan, the two key actions that were highlighted there were to first create a clear, comprehensive regulatory program for Portland's trees, and second, to enhance the urban forest as development and redevelopment occur, which seems counterintuitive, but there are ways to accomplish that, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. So this particular project was listed as a high priority item, but it didn't have sufficient funding to get off the ground until interested citizens and neighborhood representatives approached City Council and convinced them that it is a high priority item and work needed to begin in earnest. So we began. We started working with the key implementing bureaus through a collaborative scoping process to define what would be addressed and what was sort of beyond the scope of a regulatory improvement project. About a 20-person stakeholder group was formed to discuss the issues and potential solution concepts, and this group included arborists, builders, developers, Audubon, neighborhood representatives, and so forth. Those initial concepts were then vetted before the Urban Forestry and Planning Commissions. So we wanted to get a sense before we got too deep into code writing that we were heading the right direction. So we went to them, vetted those initial proposals. And then the project team began developing the public draft with extensive collaboration with the Bureau's Environmental Services, Development Services, Parks, Urban Forestry, Water, and Transportation. So we are now in the legislative process and have completed a series of hearings and work sessions with the Planning and Urban Forestry Commissions, who actually met in a joint format for initial four or five of those work sessions, and then split apart, and we had to staff both commissions. But at the end, both commissions endorsed the proposal with the changes in direction that emerged through the hearings process, and have directed staff to develop a recommended draft for City Council's review. So that's where we're currently at, is working on that final council draft. So some of the key issues that we have been tasked to address include the complexity of the regulatory framework. With the rules spread over several titles of city code administered by different bureaus and adopted piecemeal over several decades, there lacks a cohesion among those rules. We're also looking to align the system that addresses trees before development through the land use review process and subsequent building construction to what happens to the trees post-development. So the current rules are all over the map, regulating trees before development, and in some cases not during development, and then again after development is completed. Tree permit requirements apply to some lots while exempting others, and there are gaps and there are overlaps in the city's regulations. And one key frustration is the inability to determine which bureau someone should call with questions or concerns relating to tree activity. So since each bureau administers its own piece of this puzzle, someone wanting to get an answer on a particular question has to check in with a number of different bureaus to get that answer. So here's where we've gone with the project. The first task was to look at ways of consolidating the code, to look at look across the various titles for the tree regulations and consolidate them into a single new title, Title 11, which would address trees in both development and non-development situations. But there's also this correlation and strong link needed to the zoning code, because there are elements in land use that are necessarily related to tree issues. So placing the tree rules in one location ensures better consistency and cohesion among those rules, emphasizes the city's commitment to the urban forest, creates a home for the Urban Forestry Program and Urban Forestry Commission, and makes it simpler for members of the public to find the tree rules. And as Roberta sort of noted, this is kind of a paradigm shift in looking at trees as an infrastructure asset. So it's kind of like other infrastructure titles and looking at treating trees like a capital asset, similar to other elements of the city's infrastructure. And then Stephanie's going to talk about development-related stuff.
So move into some of the stuff that you guys are probably a little bit more familiar with in terms of land use reviews and zoning requirements that have been addressed through the project. The proposal really is trying to build on existing policies and procedures that are currently in place and find ways to better address trees through that process. So a key part of that is looking at the existing land division regulations that have tree preservation requirements in place now. And the focus was really to emphasize preservation of large, healthy trees and groves, which was seen as an issue with the current regulations. Look more at just a number of inches as opposed to looking at what are the really good trees out there. Providing more flexibility to consider site constraints and specific site characteristics. Better addressing off-site impacts by evaluating trees on property lines and off-site trees on adjacent properties. Providing better access to information by recording tree preservation plans and then sunsetting those plans after a specified time period. We're proposing 10 years because right now these tree requirements last forever, and everyone knows that trees don't actually last forever and conditions change, and at a certain point there should be additional flexibility provided for folks that have tree regulations on their property. There's also a new exception proposed for the Central City Plan District to recognize that would exempt those projects from addressing tree preservation at the time of the land division, to recognize the unique character of the Central City Plan District, and also that it would be more appropriate in most cases to look at tree preservation in the context of a design review where you're looking at specific site and layout and what's possible on that site through that process instead, as opposed to when you're dividing land. Also, in design reviews and conditional uses, tree preservation is being added as a new factor to consider as appropriate to the specific site and review. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about what that means in a second. And then also, there are a number of amendments proposed to address gaps in regulations and improve consistency across a number of overlay zones and plan districts that have existing tree regulations, like the environmental zone, South Auditorium, which I'll also mention in a minute, a little bit more about that, Greenway, Rocky Butte, so forth. Those all have special tree regulations, and they were kind of all over the map with different size thresholds and standards, and so we're trying to make those more consistent. Go to the next one. So wanted to tell you a little bit more about what's proposed for design reviews. So right now, as you know, design review operates a little bit differently from most land use reviews, where there's not specific approval criteria that you look at, but you look at design guidelines, and the project needs to be consistent with those guidelines. And there are actually quite a few guidelines that do talk about the importance of mature trees and retaining trees where possible, but there's kind of a hole in the zoning code where it talks about the factors that may be reviewed during design review, does not specifically include tree preservation. So it's just a very small change that we're proposing to add, along with architectural style, structure placement. There's a whole long list, open areas, landscaping, and tree preservation, to make it very explicit that the design review can consider existing trees and could require trees to be retained where it makes sense in that context.
Is there a threshold when the tree, since we'd have to depend on Jane a lot, we all like trees, right? But some trees are more special than others, obviously. So where does the special line come in? Is that what, that's pretty much what you're asking for, right?
That would be something that would be determined through the design review with input from the neighbors, perhaps when they comment, the design planner.
Yeah, I could add a little bit to that. I think obviously this commission sees typically projects that staff reviews on a more daily basis only on an appeal, meaning the type 2 design review projects. And we actually deal with trees a lot in our reviews. And usually, however, it's the reverse, where because the tree's there, it actually moves the new addition or the accessory dwelling unit into a setback. And we acknowledge that saving that tree is worth it, as opposed to having to meet a setback and chopping it down, because it obviously provides a benefit more than just that property, but more than likely several properties around it. From a design commission standpoint, at the type 3 threshold, it may or may not come up, but the point made is now we can make it a more important part of the conversation if necessary and if appropriate. Before it, generally, it's kind of a clean slate.
I guess the question would be, you've got a type 2 we've seen lots of larger projects of type 2 that have been appealed on various reasons. The threshold for an appeal based on a tree preservation issue.
It could even occur right now tied to the guidelines. I mean, we have guidelines that speak towards landscaping. And again, it's more of a, it's really from a zoning code standpoint, it's more of a point of a clarification, but important. Not one that we haven't otherwise dealt with. It's not really anything new per se, but it's another little edge on the hammer.
You don't envision, you know, a neighborhood association that's very opposed to a project for maybe other reasons.
Yeah, I guess that's
pulling up the tree clause as because they're cutting down a tree to build it.
I don't. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, a lot of what happens with infill.
Right.
Is a vacant lot that had a tree on it for 100 years is now ready for its five-story building that it's been zoned for 100 years. I don't know. I mean, that it's possible that that could be a new point of concern, but then we get into zoning issues and entitlements. And in a case like that, if it's an infill lot, you know, we're also going to see the urban forester say, well, we need a street tree here and a street tree here and a street tree here. And
still be allowable.
So, yeah, from an urban canopy standpoint, it's a balance, which is generally what this whole thing is about. This is cleaning up so many holes right now. This is a minor one in the scheme of things.
Just as a matter of recollection, about 3 years ago, didn't we have an appeal on a type 2 appeal on a project in the Lloyd District?
Maybe.
About the tree.
Remember that was the bank building. That was going to go on existing Lloyd Center property, and there were four. I can't remember what species of tree, but they were there. In that case, I mean, I think that we were leveraging some of our muscle, I guess, to some degree to kind of preserve, I think, two of the trees out of the four.
Yeah, we had a tree conversation anyway, because it mattered.
The one other thing I was going to say is you asked a question about the size of tree and what makes it special, and we'll talk about it a little bit more in a minute, but there are also going to be building permit standards that would apply to all sites that look at tree preservation, and the threshold where we're starting to look at that is 12-inch diameter. So that's just to give you an idea of where we'll probably start looking at that site, at trees. Moving on to the South Auditorium Plan District, which is the area we're in right now. There's currently a pretty strict requirement in the plan district that requires design review for any removal of any existing trees in the plan district. So we're proposing a few changes to that. One would be to add a 6-inch size threshold, which is consistent with most of the other plan districts and overlay zones that have tree removal restrictions in the zoning code. So adding that, so there would be a threshold under which you wouldn't trigger design review if it was a smaller tree, as well as an exemption for dead, diseased, and dangerous trees. And currently, even though that's one of the criteria that would allow you to remove one of the trees, but you would still have to go through the design review to do that. And there's actually a design case in right now where the city forester is having to go through design review to remove several trees that have Dutch elm disease. So it has reared its head as a problem, and it doesn't seem like a very good use of anyone's resources to go through a review process to address that situation. So we want to clean that up. And then there are a couple of fairly minor changes to the approval criteria proposed to address more situations where trees might need to be removed in conjunction with development, as opposed to just being under a new building. Might be street improvements or other types of improvements that would trigger tree removal. And then also providing some more flexibility for the design review to determine the exact planting location as to being consistent with the original planting scheme of the district. Move on, unless anyone has any questions. So for building permits, I mentioned earlier, this is probably the biggest gap in the current system. Currently, unless you had some special requirements where you were in a plan district or you had a land use review that addressed trees, there really were no requirement to look at tree preservation or existing trees on the site. So the proposal is to have some clear and objective standards that would apply to all sites. We're estimating that it would apply to approximately 5,000 building permits a year once things ramp back up to a more predictable level of development. The tree preservation standard would set a target for preservation of existing trees and would require a mitigation payment if the standard isn't met. So that's, we're looking at 35% of trees over 12 inches diameter. There are some exemptions proposed for very small sites, sites with high building coverage, recognizing that it's not possible to preserve trees in those situations. And there were some comments on the earlier draft by the development community that had concerns about those requirements. So we've added exemptions for those situations.
So do you have a sense of how much that might be for a small project, like your mitigation payment? You're going to pay an additional permit fee to remove trees if you don't meet that standard.
Right.
Do you know what that ratio is or how much money you're talking about?
So the right now the payment would be $600 per tree, and that's based on the cost for the city to plant and establish a tree, maintain a tree for
somewhere
2 years. Yes, it's for off-site planting. So the mitigation payment, if you were short one tree, would be $1,200.
Wow.
Right.
And the money would go into the city's tree fund, and right now the requirement would be that tree is planted somewhere in that same watershed.
Mm-hmm.
That it goes back into that neighborhood or that watershed, and parks works with the neighborhoods to find places to plant where it benefits them, like schools and so forth.
So just a quick question. You've got a 4,000 square foot or a 5,000 square foot lot, so it's not exempt. It's got two 14-inch diameter trees on it.
And right in the middle.
Right square in the middle.
You'd have to keep one to meet the standard. And then if you couldn't meet the standard because they're right in the middle, you would have to mitigate for the one. You'd have to pay
$1,200. What if you had one tree?
Per tree
that you're not preserving. So if you had to preserve one, you...
The two is
$1,200.
Well, it's two for one replacement. So one tree over is cost of two.
I have a question. If you're just completely changing the use, and let's say you have an existing parking lot and the trees, you have quite a few trees because it's, you know, one block large parking lot right now, your development's going to take up that entire space, are you having to pay that mitigation fee for every tree that you're removing?
There's an exemption for developments that have a 90% building coverage or more. So if you're building out the site, mm-hmm. then no. But if you fall below that, and then you would be you would need to meet the preservation standard or make the payment.
So there's no mitigation, no option to do on-site mitigation. For example, I'm going to go back to my 5,000 square foot site with the two trees planted in the middle and that are growing there. And that's the developable spot because everything else is setbacks around the perimeter. So plop the building down in the middle. I have to take out the two trees. I would have been required to have saved 35% of two trees. So I'm rounding up to one tree. I owe you $1,200, but there's no way that I can go in and, even if I were going to plant 20 trees in the setbacks and establish them, I still owe you $1,200.
Right. So the other part of what's proposed for the building permit scenario is a tree density standard, which would require a certain number of trees based on site area, and then it would be geared towards the use. So it would be very by use, but that's going to require a certain baseline tree number of trees based on, you know, the capacity of the site to take trees. And so there was originally a proposal for a preserve plant pay option for the preservation standard, but there was concern expressed about overplanting sites. If people had to plant to meet their tree density standard and then also plant for mitigation, that we were going to get the sites overplanted. And that's the reason why the mitigation payment, as well as to kind of simplify the standards. That's so, why that's.
I'm going to go back to Jane's case, just administratively. She's got a half block parking lot that's been there for 20 years. It was planted well when it was initially planted, so it's got a bunch of big trees in the middle of the site. Let's say there are 30 trees. Let's say there were 100 trees. You'd be required to save 35 of them, right? So you can free of charge take out 65 trees. Those other 35 trees, you're either organizing your development around or you're paying to take them out.
So you'd have to pay to put back 60.
If you pay 30 for 35 trees, you're buying 70 at $1,200 a piece, $84,000.
You'd be buying 70 for $600 each. So.
70 for $600.
These are all trees over at least
12 inches. Right.
That's what these days.
The non-development side of things, but just for comparison's sake, the way that the system is designed is to have tree removal outside of development and in development sort of complement one another. So if you're removing those 100 trees without a development project, you could be required to replace them up to an inch per inch at $300 an inch. So
currently,
that's the current standard, and that's being carried forward.
What is it? Two?
So
100?
Three. That's $300 per caliper inch up to inch per inch replacement. So, I mean, that can be obviously a significant mitigation payment. And there are assessments made of the quality of the tree and so on and so forth that happen in that process. But when you kind of look at those two situations, what this project has done is create an allowance for some flexibility, allow for some flexibility to site the building design on the lot, and sets a target, but has, in essence, a offsetting mitigation requirement that balances the requirements for tree preservation in development and outside of development. It's trying to acknowledge the fact that development is intended to occur on these sites, so there's that allowance built in, but there's still a mitigation component involved.
So is the alternate review process for this the adjustment
process for a building permit type person, if they've got an application and whatever comes straight out of the new tree code is unrealistic, or they deem it to be they've got a better solution, they can go through the adjustment process and adjust these things, or adjust their what they're planting or what they're building or their penalty, or demonstrate that the site, you know, the site's zoned high density and it's got all these trees on it, and you know, it's increasing the sort of unfairly increasing the cost of development. I mean, because I could see that happening where there's a contradictory, zoning designation.
Right. Well, there may be a site that, you know, is a perfectly urban, perfectly good urban renewal site that is added cost could be significant in terms of, you know, maybe the deal is hair thin right now in the pro forma, and then you add, I don't know, time and money is always a threat to those projects.
You drive by a site, see the value of a site, and say, oh, but
there's trees on it.
Trees, that's down $26,000.
Yeah.
Off worth
less
immediately
because of the trees.
Yeah.
And I don't understand the 2X. If the money's going, it's what you know is going to cost the city to replace the tree, why would you do 2X that? I mean, are you assuming that you're going to replace the trees and half of them are going to die?
No. So the 2-to-1 is to get at the fact that you're taking out a mature tree and they're going to be replaced by small 2-inch caliper trees. And it will take time for them to grow and mature and provide any kind of relative benefit.
I assume they'd be planted in a place that wouldn't be developed in the future then?
Just next door. Just
yeah, the next lot over. Oh, this is an income thing. Yeah. We didn't really,
And one thing we might mention is that what we're describing now is actually a revised proposal relative to the proposal that came out in February. And the revisions that occurred through the Planning Commission and Urban Forestry Commission hearings process were intended to respond to issues that were raised by the development community. The changes, the specific changes, include the addition of the small lot exemption. There was a concern about these really small lots, you know, and whether you really could feasibly preserve trees. Those would still be subject to the density standard. That was something the Planning Commission wanted to make sure that they were still subject to the density standard. The developments with 90% building coverage is added, and the mitigation requirement was reduced. Originally, there was an escalating mitigation requirement. Some other municipalities in the region retain an inch-for-inch replacement for trees that don't meet their standards, and we felt that that was too, there was too much uncertainty, and also the costs were too high. So the goal, I guess, the goal is to not trigger any reviews. Actually, there was a real interest in not having this extend the time of the building permit process, having a clear and objective standard. That was a probably the strongest message from the Home Builders Association was keep these clear and objectives, do not trigger review. And keep the mitigation requirements reasonable. There's still, you know, there's still issues around that. I think you've targeted right the issue of the preserve plant pay option and the removal of the planting option on site to prevent overplanting. We're looking at possibly trying to create a limited planting option within that preservation mitigation option so that we don't overplant the site, but we do allow some planting. They've suggested we do that. So I'm hearing some of the same kinds of issues and concerns here, but there was a lot of, all I'm saying is there's a lot of time spent on honing this particular standard to try to balance the kind of keeping the capacity of the tree infrastructure and addressing the delay it takes to have trees grow and provide the benefits they provide without stymieing or without, you know, burdening the development process unduly. So
I think that the, you know, my interest here is ease of administration, right, for one, but that it not be all stick and no carrot in terms of the way the regulation works for designers and developers. And I do have just one question. I assume that you go into the permit center and you've got your set of plans and you're running through your building permit application. Planner says, well, no, you got these trees. It's just, you know, you're going to have to mitigate. And I suppose that person, that applicant at that point, has the opportunity to bring in an arborist that says dead, diseased, or dangerous, or diseased or dangerous. And then the city forester can go out and look at it. And then you've got the, you know, you can get an arborist, you can find an arborist who will say anything, basically, is what we've found in the past. So, I mean, whatever, you know, they come in lots of flavors. And so how does that get resolved?
Well, so I'll start by responding to one of your points about some credits or some incentives. So there are, beyond having to mitigate, if you do preserve trees, you do get credit for that, and you get more credit for preserving than just planting a tree. So, you know, if you were to preserve, if you had a requirement, I don't know the exact ratio, but if you had a requirement to plant a bunch of trees and you preserved a few, that could potentially cover your whole planting requirement. So that is in there. We've also are proposing some what we're calling flexible development standards in the zoning code that would allow you to modify standards without going through a land use review if it was going to result in preservation of a tree. That includes some, in multi-dwelling zones, some density bonuses as well as minimum density reduction, that sort of thing. So those are some things we've tried to do to make it easier to do that. In terms of, what was the last question? What was your last question?
Arborist.
Oh, the arborist. You know, in general, it's a problem now. And for the most part, the city staff accepts the arborist report that comes through the door. Part of what this proposal, this project has tried to do is to get more input from the city, city forest or urban forestry staff, and have them more available, and to have funding to have them more available to visit sites where needed, in unique situations, not on in, on everyone. For the most part, the staff's going to accept the professional report, but in unique situations, there there will hopefully be the ability to bring in the forester to have more of a neutral party.
Thanks.
So what I want to do is, you guys are almost to the end of your presentation. I was going to maybe have you go through the rest of that and pose some questions.
Okay.
Then we'll kind of go through.
So another quick element of the proposal is looking also at public works and capital improvement projects. This is essentially just making sure the city also steps up to the plate on trees. They do a lot of this work anyway, but most of the bureaus do. But it's essentially just to hopefully create more of a systematic approach to how the public projects go through the process. The main part of it is a required early consultation with the city forester when public projects would potentially impact trees. There's also a more consistent tree replacement requirement to provide more certainty about the outcomes, but there's still flexibility for the city forester to address unique situations and provide reductions and waivers in those situations.
So I mentioned the tree permit system. So outside of the development context, when someone just wants to take a tree off of their property, or is removing a street tree or a tree from a park. So in the for the city and street trees, the system already addresses permits or permit requirements for planting, pruning, and removal of any size tree. So we focused on some minor refinements, including specifying a 3-inch minimum tree size versus the, you know, down to zero kind of situation. As well as instituting a prohibition on the planting of nuisance plant species is more consistent with our city's recent invasive plant management strategy. So these are trees like Tree of Heaven, Black Locust, English Holly, but also include some common street trees like the Norway Maple and English Hawthorn. So we're developing or exploring suitable replacement type tree species for those situations. On the private side, the focus turned more to a more of a public outreach campaign with some moderate changes to the tree permit requirements. So the call before you cut system is intended to offer a quick check for property owners to determine whether they need a permit and to receive a written response when no permit is required, to give them some peace of mind, for one, as well as satisfy concerned neighbors. And this interaction also gives the city an opportunity to provide tree planting information and possibly in the future discount coupons for purchasing replacement trees. So add a little incentive into the requirement there. For private trees, we're looking at developing a two-track permit system, one for all non-fully built out single-family lots. So basically, if you have a commercial property, industrial property, or large developable, subdividable piece of property, which is currently regulated with the tree permit requirement, that would continue to be the case. 12-inch and larger trees would require a permit with some level of review and escalating levels of tree replacement. The major change there is we've upped the tree size that can be appealed by neighbors from 12 to 20 inches, as well as constrained the replacement requirements from that inch-for-inch mitigation to a tree-to-tree replacement, or three trees to tree based on the size of the tree. Except for situations where you're removing multiple trees, lots of trees from a site, and then you get back into the potential inch-for-inch mitigation situation. So it's basically added a little clarity around that. For the fully built-out single-family lots, which are currently exempt from tree permit requirements, there is a proposal to have it to address 20-inch and larger tree sizes with a permit. There is no review. Essentially, it just requires replacement of those trees at tree-for-tree ratio to ensure that the urban forest is replenished as those trees are removed.
What did that mean? Say that again.
So if I have a 20-inch tree on my lot and I remove it, I have to plant more trees?
You have to plant a tree.
A tree on my lot.
Yeah. Or you can also pay a fee in lieu, but...
So you take out an 18-inch, you have to put back an 18?
If you're on one of those fully built-out lots and it's less than 20 inches, then there's no permit required.
But you have to replace it.
There's no permit. There's no replacement.
20 bigger than, got it.
Yeah.
For the homeowners.
Yeah, that's fairly big.
Fairly tree.
So through the development of the project proposal, a number of customer service improvement ideas also emerged. These are intended to support the proposed regulations and address some implementation issues. Now, I mentioned how people have to sort of bounce back and forth between different bureaus to get answers. So one of the key ideas here is a single point of contact, a sort of single source for information about tree regulations, whether it's development related or non-development related. This person could administer the permit program, or for more complicated involved questions, they would have resources to direct you to the right person to talk to. After hours, we got a lot of expressed concern about people cutting trees on weekends, and there's no one to call, no one will come out and take a look. So we're looking at developing a pilot program based on BES's spill response hotline to kind of get a sense for what the actual need for this after hours hotline is. So they would pilot that. The community tree manual could be a code made easy sort of document, including pictures and examples of other projects where tree preservation was integrated into the site design. Other methods of tree protection, best management practices, and additional modules could be added in the future to address topics of community interest, like integrating trees and solar, food producing trees, native landscapes, and so forth. To assist the single point of contact and 24-hour hotline, as well as allow the public to inquire about tree activity online without having to go knock on the neighbor's door, we're looking at upgrading the city's permit tracking system to enable those tree permits to be displayed on Portland maps. So if you think somebody's cutting a tree, before you call the hotline, you can look online, see if they have a permit, and say, yeah, okay, they're fine. Or they're not. I need to go call that hotline. The Neighborhood Tree Plan is an outreach tool that Urban Forestry has received a grant to pilot. This involves connecting with a particular neighborhood, providing some training and education, as well as enlisting the neighborhood's help in inventorying existing trees and developing planting priorities for the area. It's a sort of a community building tool.
One thing I wanted to mention on the previous part of the discussion about the building situation, I'm not sure you mentioned that the proposal also includes some changes to the city's tree protection. Root zone protection requirements, allowing for alternative root protection approaches with an arborist's approval, but also some limited encroachment. So there's been some discussion about sort of the rigidity of the root zone protection requirements. So we were trying to make it easier to preserve trees with the code and with the flexible development standards, but also by allowing a bit more flexibility in how the trees themselves are protected. So hopefully all the pieces add up to something that's flexible enough for most developments without cost and little additional time. So you mentioned the hearing process, and the Planning Commission and Forestry Commission each had four separate work sessions to go through this. It was extensive. It had to do with a lot of the titles and a lot of the functions and so forth. And the feedback from the community feedback was pretty strong support for the overall proposal. There were concerns raised from the development community about some of the issues that we just talked about, those preservation standards and mitigation standards related to development, and we've modified the proposal significantly at the end of. And the other thing that we heard initially was that the proposal was too complex. People are very interested in simplicity, certainty, and flexibility, so that's always the fine edge we're walking. But we spent about 3 or 4 months working with development services, Parks, Urban Forestry, BES, Water and Transportation to really kind of hone and simplify the proposal. And we're able to, through that process, cut the implementation costs in half from where it was. But it's still not free. I mean, it's not a free proposal because the city isn't investing in these areas and trees right now and to a large extent. And so you have to invest more. So the upshot is that this proposal is estimated to generate 120 to 130 future canopy acres per year. Some of it would be in the present, some of it would be in the future. It's through a combination of fairly conservative estimates of improved preservation of trees and also the planting requirements. More than 90% of those benefits are associated with anticipated development related situations. We had to make assumptions about the permit activity and so forth to do that. And, you know, one of the questions that we got was, well, what if you just put the costs and the funds toward planting trees instead of doing this regulatory piece? And as it turns out, if you look at the calculations for benefit and you look at the calculations for cost, the overall tree canopy benefit is about 10 times as much over time with the proposal than if the city put the money toward planting. But the bigger issue is when you have an asset that's worth as much as this and it's being replenished in the city and community are already investing in this, the goal is that this regulatory framework in a reasonable way just shores up the protections for that asset once it's in place, recognizing that it's going to grow, change, die, and change out over time. So the ongoing costs of this are about $600,000 a year. Two-thirds of that could be supported through very modest increases in development fees, and it's somewhere between $30 and $100 per building permit, we've estimated, which could be prorated by project from something, you know, very minuscule for very small projects to something that is equally nominal for larger projects. This isn't a good time to raise fees. We know that. Nor is it a good time to tap the general fund. So the council, the bureau directors have decided to go to council in the fall with a phased approach for implementation, one that would ask the council to take action on the policy and the code amendments, to direct the bureaus to budget for the non-regulatory customer service improvements that Morgan just described, to get those systems in place, to have the single point of contact and the tree manual and the outreach and so forth, and then sort of ramp into the code amendments, perhaps potentially moving into effect some of the code amendments that don't drive costs, that don't have cost impacts, and that improve the situation, like not requiring design review for removing, dead or dying trees in design districts, but would have the bulk of the code amendments, the changes in the building process, be delayed at least till fiscal year 2012-13, where the hope is that the economy will have picked up and that development activity will be regenerating. So that's kind of the way we're thinking about this right now. It'll also give time to work with the development community, the arborist community, citizens, and so forth, to provide public education outreach. Right now, the city is cost sharing, essentially, tree replacement through the tree bait program. We're hoping that that funding continues so that when we have people taking out trees and they're required to put a tree in, you or me, that the city will say, if you put a tree in right now, you can get up to $50 off on your stormwater bill. So we're wanting to try to complement those investments with this work. So the hope is that we will have a revised draft out to the public and the community for review in November, council hearings in December. And we're interested in any feedback you have now and also how to, get the information to you when the draft is out, or any other things you'd like to discuss.
Let's kind of open it up and go through a final round of questions.
I have a question relative to how this program might interface with other organizations like Friends of Trees. And is this something, they plant trees probably much less cost per tree than the city does, because it's all volunteer work and things like that. Or is there a thought that funding can go to them at a more kind of lower dollar per tree, or any kind of working with those kinds of groups at all?
Well, Friends of Trees is on the project stakeholder group and have been very supportive of the process and the proposal. The Friends of Trees is a contractor with the city, and so right now the tree fund is administered through Parks, and Parks does a lot of their own in-house work, but conceivably, the funds need to be channeled into a pot where the city can be accountable for the expenditure of those funds and track those and monitor those, but conceivably funds could be worked through city staff or through city contractor. That would be sort of an operational issue. So if that's a something you'd like to pass along as a suggestion, we could.
Well, I think
you know,
if you're looking to maximize your tree per dollar, then that seems to make sense. I mean, you know, it would be worth exploring, I think. I mean, I know friends, I've been on a lot of their, in fact, our office did it a couple times where it was a kind of a volunteer day where we worked with Friends of Trees at, I think, Johnson Creek Watershed, and some planted
right.
you know, a couple hundred trees in a day. And so another of my friends, you know, contracted with Friends of Trees in a volunteer effort in her neighborhood to plant trees within a 3 or 4 block, you know, kind
right.
of radius. So I think if you could partner with them, it seems like the dollar per tree and the numbers of trees and all that would be you know, more economical and more community-based also.
So maximize the dollars is what you're saying, yeah. Yeah, that's good. That's good input. We've
This is a question more about kind of overall public health, and I don't know what I don't even know if this is being addressed in this review at all, but what the city forester's position is on pollen producing trees as opposed to litter producing trees and air quality. I mean, it's an overall air quality question, and I know there's been an NPR report of maybe 5 or 6 years ago talking about male trees, which are producing pollen as opposed to fruiting trees, and what you guys are, you know, what the dollar cost analysis is as opposed to, like, the health of the city overall and hay fever and et cetera.
Would you briefly restate your question?
Sure. I'm wondering what Portland's urban forestry policy is towards basically planting trees that are pollen producers as opposed to litter producers in the same species, male trees versus female trees, and whether or not the city has looked at. It seems to, what I've heard is that across the nation, urban foresters tend to favor the male form of the species because they don't produce litter. But they do produce an excess of pollen. So you're seeing these kind of pollen islands where you're having heavier asthma problems and hay fever problems because they're less expensive to take care of, basically.
We don't have a sexual bias here.
Okay, that's
okay.
What I'm just, you know.
But I will tell you that, in brief, let me just say that our policy, as far as it applies to the city, it's I can be summed up quickly, you know, right tree in the right place. So what we try to do is maximize, particularly in street tree planting and other situations like that, we try to maximize the planting space, recognizing that, and you've all seen it, that we have a city that's grown up over time, and you have many examples of the tree not being in the right place. Well, you know, we try to learn. And so right now we strive to maximize canopy whenever we can. And when we also do another thing where we look to maximize diversity in the urban landscape. So where many of us in the past have thought of things as monocultures, a really nice aesthetic look, it's actually probably not as good for a lot of other arboricultural reasons. You know, it spreads disease, it kind of limits a lot of options that we would have. So we're continually modifying our prescriptions, and we're going through another review right now, and also continuing to amend it where it works with other policies in the city. And perhaps you've been apprised of the invasive species policy, and there is a case where we're adjusting our tree inventory and composition to reflect the new policy of the city. So as far as one thing we're trying to do, though, and it's not always possible, is plant more conifers in the city, evergreens. They are 24/7. They provide those benefits year-round. Deciduous trees do lose their leaves, and they're not quite as functional in the winter. And I think you can note that as you fly over the city in the winter, Portland looks pretty gray. Come over and the city looks really green. And a lot of that has to do, except if you're in the West Hills and you see it very green. So we're trying to build more conifers into our palette of trees for the city. Okay?
Just having a huge cedar tree in my backyard, year-round, it's a maintenance issue versus once a year for my front yard, which is silver maples. So
right.
Thank you very much for your contribution. We really appreciate it. I have three of them, too, and I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. You know, they're continually kind of giving their presence to the art. Yeah, I know. And so, but in many respects, you know, they're the things that we just, they're like pets, you know. We take care of them, and they provide benefits to us. Yeah, there we go. Okay.
Well, I just wanted to clarify one thing, sure. Just to get a little input. You said the monoculture versus variety in one street over from me is Knott Street in Northeast, and it's beautiful. I'm not sure what the trees are, but for several blocks, it just creates a very distinctive canopy in the summer.
Yeah.
Streetscape. So from an aesthetic and kind of even shade kind of element, when you talk about a monoculture, or are you trying to limit a monoculture to like each lot or a block or?
Well, you know, we're certainly conscious of the historic element of the city, but what we know right now, today, that as we're planning redevelopment, and you look at it at Front Avenue first and along the west side of the river, that used to be a monoculture, and we really worked with the landscape design community, and they're starting to recognize now that it really, two or three different species often works better in their design than and so they're learning as well. The benefits of that, though, is that if you make a mistake, you make it on a more limited basis, and that is to say, you know, the other elements of the landscape design. What we have found is that working with these communities, that we probably aren't going to, in the future, emphasize monocultures, but we value them in our community, and we don't intend to remove them. Okay.
But they're more vulnerable, right?
More vulnerable. Recognize one thing, I think, at its very basis. We ask... Many of you are familiar with our tree code, and if you're a property owner and you have a tree in your right-of-way, you're responsible for it under the city code. And that places a lot of responsibility on the private citizen to contribute to the care of those trees. So when we ask people, want to plant a tree in their yard, we try not to be dogmatic about which tree they plant. You know, they're doing the city a very good favor. And what we say is we try to work with them to have them plant the tree that really works. If in the situation you described and they were replacing one and they were insistent on having a different tree other than the one that was in that one, and I can't imagine why if it creates this wonderful character, but if that was the case, we certainly wouldn't say no to that. Okay.
I have one. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Okay, thanks. This is more of a Title 33 comment, but I have a real concern that we're overplanting our parking lots just based on what's required by the code. And just the number of trees that are required and the spacing really doesn't allow for their canopies to fully develop. And I'm just worried that it's going to cause a problem, you know, years from now as those trees mature. And it's just something as a practicing landscape architect, you know, for the last however many years, it's just a really tough challenge to try to get the total number of trees that are required for a specific parking lot, no matter what its configuration is, and it's really a struggle.
I'm curious if that's been since there were new parking lot landscaping standards put in place. I'm not sure how many years ago. Is that the new ones or what you're referring to?
Yeah, it's been an ongoing, I'd say for the last 10 years, it's been a real ongoing kind of challenge. First of all, to get the required number of trees in, small, medium, or large, but we've tried all different kinds of configurations, and it's a constant challenge, and it's just an ongoing concern that as these trees get bigger, their, you know, canopies are really going to fight each other, and what's going to happen? It seems like they're going to need to be thinned out over time. So I just wanted to mention that as a comment.
They're all going to be cut before they're 12 inches. Right.
So one comment on how the landscape and parking lot tree standards relate to the tree density requirements we're talking about is whatever you plant for your landscaping counts towards those tree density requirements. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't result in additional trees on top of that unless the tree density wasn't being met for some reason. But I'm interested in talking a little bit more about that.
And I was just going to say that my overall feeling just going through the presentation was from a development perspective, as Tim says, it felt like more stick than carrot to me, kind of just overwhelmingly so. And the fees, $1,200, as you may know, just on a single-family residence permit, is quite a substantial jump if that appears. And I think a lot of people, from my feeling of particularly close in Portland, the development community has already taken upon themselves to plant more trees than they cut down. And I think one interesting perspective would be, like, since we've been doing it, we have a pretty passionate associate that has counted how many trees we've cut down to how many we've planted in the past 10 or 12 years, and it's like 120 to 6. So if there's any way to actually accredit develop people who do this professionally, so that they can build this cache, so that when, if they did cut down a tree, they've actually, they can point to a whole street of mature trees planted 8 years ago that weren't requirements, that are in the bank, so to speak, for them, I think would be a good idea. Also, it feels to me like the replacement of trees feels more of a regional issue, and I'm wondering if the funds could go to Metro to buy tracts of mature land with trees that are already doing what they're meant to do rather than the planting of new trees. Something, the purchase of land that stays as mature trees forever would be a good offset for cutting down a tree. I was also struck, I think Jeff and I both picked up, 3 inches feels pretty small. You know, even a site left alone for 2 years will have 3-inch black locusts and 3-inch maples. And so that's a 2.5-year-old tree from a lot of the projects we work on. So, and then the, and again, just the price, I could see if it's showing up on a permit, 200, 250, 300, but 1200, I mean, just feels just way out of scale for, I mean, we have nurseries that'll come plant 15-foot trees for $180. And so any developer who goes down and sees his permits, these 1,200, they could have 5 trees planted for 1,200. So just that disparity, again, from the development community, I think would be pretty clear.
Just to clarify, Ben, 3-inch sounds really large to me to go in, and it, mostly because in what I've experienced in many cases is that the selection of trees, you know, around 3 and 4 has been very limited. And in many cases, the tree that you want, sometimes you can get it 2.5-inch. Yeah, and right. The forester is aware of this, and we've been able to work through some of this stuff. But again, it would be something where could you, if you could only source a slightly smaller tree, can you increase your protection and the way that it's staked, get a healthier tree that's younger that can get established and maybe catch up within a couple years? And I realize you guys have to cut the, you know, you have to put the regulation there somewhere, but I just know that it's getting harder and harder to even find 2-inch trees in many cases.
So we on that point, and just to recognize, you're talking about, I think, cutting down existing trees at 3 inches, and you're talking about the minimum size of planting.
Yeah.
So we looked at the planting size standards and have adjusted those smaller.
There was 4, and so you're saying 3 now?
I think it's 1 to 3. Yeah, it varies from 1 to 2.5 now. And, you know, there are situations where the forester can make decisions go bigger or smaller depending on whatever. But in general, the standard has been made smaller. On existing trees being cut down, the threshold for that size is 12 inches and larger.
For private
trees. The 3-inch tree size is, you know, if you're removing trees in the street or trees from a park. And that has more to do with, at least the city trees, has more to do with the Bureau activities.
And on that point, right now in the current code, any of us would need to get a permit to plant, prune, or remove any tree of any size on city-owned or managed property, including rights-of-way. And so there was feedback to the project that seemed, overly restrictive, and so the 3-inch was actually added to say that, you know, trees under 3 inches can be removed.
To kind of get at that situation with the saplings that just sort of pop up out of the ground. And you made the comment about
a regional sort of approach, and I think that's great. I think Metro is beginning some work looking at a sort of regional context for tree regulations. It's a little premature. The proposal includes the ability for the city to purchase either conservation easements or tracts of land that have existing trees if that opportunity presents itself. So there's some question if there's going to be enough funds to do that, but at least we've expanded the authorization to allow for it.
But on that point, you know, one of the things that we heard in testimony here in this room from a lot of neighborhood people was it's really important as the city grows and gets denser that those trees be well distributed across the city landscape. And there's a real sensitivity to areas becoming kind of sacrifice zones because they're infill zones. And so people are pretty sensitive to the notion of pooling all the money and finding a big natural area and putting all those trees there. They really want those trees in those neighborhoods. And so the goal is actually to try to leverage and you know, kind of sync up with the development process to sort of have a systematic replenishment of trees on sites, on streets, in those neighborhoods as much as possible.
That's an interesting question, Roberta. On the plan, it seemed like right at the property line of some of the neighborhoods was green and then stopped. What was it that sparked, it looked like up north, just maybe a particular neighborhood, maybe Buckman or something, there's dense of green and then stopped. What's the neighborhood line that got planting of trees in the past?
Yeah, we have to look at it. I have to look at the thing. It may be, you know, up there's areas that transition very quickly from residential to non-residential use, like an industrial use, or it may be, schools or campuses. It's hard to tell, but yeah, when you see straight lines, you always kind of wonder what is going on there.
My recollection on that, though, too, is that it seems like this has been tied to an economic factor in the past, too, where there are neighborhoods. I mean, I think I can think of Northeast where on one side of 33rd, there are very mature trees, and then you go far to the east side, and there's very few. And I think that those neighborhoods had smaller working class neighborhoods at the time, mm-hmm. and maybe didn't kind of have the wherewithal to plant, either in their own yards or in the city sidewalk or the streetway. I guess I'm going to put the devil's advocate hat on for just a second, just to get some issues out. And I don't know if this is something that you have considered. This commission has worked on a few projects, particularly with the TriMet Transit Line Mall revisions, where we've actually advocated to remove trees for architectural reasons. In this case, to get better views into Pioneer Courthouse Square. There's been a few other occasions. And I guess, you know, coming from the architectural standpoint, mm-hmm. I'm not trying to say I don't like or I dislike trees. I love trees. But in many cases, and I think the city is blessed with a number of nice mature old trees and then those trees that we've planted even within the last 20, 25 years that are really obscuring the architecture of the city as well, particularly in the central city core. And the effort that it takes to kind of acknowledge that and then do something about it, it becomes Herculean to the point that in many cases it's not followed. So again, I guess my point here being, have you looked at ways to acknowledge situations like that, you know, where there might be reasons you wouldn't want trees obscuring the architecture in that situation? And I guess, yeah, since you're coming back up, if I can just tag another side to that, and you mentioned hawthorns here as well. My own experience, too, of trying to get the city forester to come out and designate that when you have a tree that's lifted up all the sidewalk and it's an ugly, you know, in this case, hawthorn that's terribly messy, getting that tree removed is, again, it seems it takes like an act of Congress, but maybe that's changing now. But it's from the designer and developer side, it's quite hard to kind of go about trying to achieve that. And in that case, it was, you know, trying to replace trees. It wasn't trying to just eliminate them,
right,
but get a better species.
And we would have asked you to replace the tree. And I hope it's not Herculean, but you know, if a tree is a chronic offender, and that is, it isn't the right tree for the right site, and it puts a burden on the property owner. There's a lot of reasons we will give a permit for that removal. And we simply asked that the property owner replant the tree, and it's a tree for tree. So the tree could be 30 inches tall, and we would ask the person to replace it with a smaller tree, and we expect, because we have a working forest, we have a working city,
yeah.
You know, and we're not in the preservation business, we're in the conservation business in the larger sense of the word. I didn't want to speak to the issue of the downtown transit mall, because I was intimately involved in that, and we had a forestry commission member, John Warner, who was actually on the citizen task force too. And I think you were right. I think we came to a really it was a situation where we removed trees, and we had to, and particularly in that area of Pioneer Cordell Square, I specifically went down and looked at that, and it made aesthetic sense to remove it. That was the kind of concept of the rooms that were moving right down through downtown Portland. It made sense. Those are beautiful trees. I think it functioned better the way that it turned out. To the credit, TriMet worked really well with us, and they put a lot of money in a mitigation fund. And we have that money, and there are specifications about replanting back into the urban core and looking for opportunities down there. So while we looked at it as a change in the downtown for purposes of a number of multiple uses, there was this agreement that they would actually pay some compensation for removing those trees. I might add also that we worked, and we have an agreement in place as part of that light rail project, recognizing that in a number of merchants' mines downtown, those trees were actually, they felt doing several things, but sort of a repressive environment, too shady almost. Mm-hmm. And we've now opened up those canopies because we have some ongoing maintenance agreements, both with TriMet and the downtown business community, to open up the trees, keep them, but open them up, because we know that in a lot of the really wonderful cities of the world, trees are very important, and they're part of the integrity of the downtown, and they really add to it. So I think they recognized that concept. They wanted them lightened up, and I think there was a reasonable opportunity to do that. So I think we look at ourselves as very flexible, and we have a lot of good. We have a, well, I think, a pretty successful track record, whether it's this recent work on Burnside, where you have the couplet on the east side where trees had to be removed, and when we were able to work into aesthetic and plant some other trees down there. So it has nothing to do with this project. I think that, but from forestry standpoint, we look for good designs, we look at moving the city forward, and we look for getting something back so we can continue our planning efforts throughout the city.
Yeah.
Does that help?
Well, and I think that if the tree list or the nuisance tree list is updated, I mean, I think just getting through that process, and maybe I'm just trying to speak to the maybe for the designers and developers, there are these cases where there's the maples that are constantly lifting sidewalks where you want to get that replaced. I mean, I think trying to continue to facilitate doing that so that we can get a better tree into those situations and working with the forester with that would be
inspectors are open. And certainly, the just to finish this thought, the property owner has the opportunity to appeal a decision by the city, the decision of the city forester that says no to a removal request. They can appeal that to peers, your peers. The Forestry Commission is made up of citizens just like yourself that are appointed by the mayor, and that's the sort of adjudication body. You can appeal, make your case, and they're very open to those concerns. Yeah.
Well, and obviously the goal is, like we said, simplify it and not have to get so far and get so many people involved. The only other thing I was going to say on all this stuff, and it does come maybe from the standpoint of, and perhaps it's outside this report as well, but in many cases, the tree wells that get installed, you know, and having the forester kind of work closely with the development community in terms of identifying that one. I mean, I think over the years, the tree wells have gotten larger, which maybe helps, but then getting those root barriers kind of in as well, or having kind of a, almost like BES has their stormwater manual, you know, having the forestry division really kind of help with that as well, because I think it will save sidewalks and tripping and all those hazards down the road. So I just want to maybe flag that one as continuing to kind of help in that effort as well. And I don't know if some of this money that gets generated as a tree fund, I know the intent is to get more trees and more tree canopy, but, you know, that's another area that perhaps some expertise could go into. Because I think that way you can preserve a tree maybe longer rather than have to cut it down, you know, to get to resolve that problem with lifted sidewalks.
That's a great idea.
Any other tree-related questions? I feel fortunate. I mean, even going up to Seattle, I mean, it seems like they're such a great, well, Seattle, San Francisco, any other city on the West Coast. I mean, I live, fortunately, just up a little bit over the tree line, and that's all I see is trees. I barely see a city. So from my vantage point, I mean, I feel like overall, and then the efforts to kind of infill where we can, whether that be out towards the river and within these neighborhoods.
It's nice to be operating from where we're at. We're not in a crisis mode. We have aspirations. We have goals to improve. But we're fortunate that we're not in emergency state. Yeah.
Yeah.
Timing's good.
And so what we have heard, what I've heard from you today is, one is that we are in a constrained budget state, and yeah, we all know that, and making the best use of the tree fund dollars for planting, best use of the technology for the investment to make sure the trees are going to last as long as they can and be compatible with the infrastructure and so forth. And then I heard from a couple of you that there are some concerns about the cost of the mitigation for the tree preservation standard. And I think that, you know, yeah, we expect to continue to hear feedback on that issue. And I'm wondering, when the next draft comes out, we'd be happy to, we don't want to take too much of your time, but there's a couple ways we could do this. One is to just make sure the members are on the list, and at that point there could be feedback to the council on the proposal, these components of the proposal. As members, we could come back and certainly would welcome feedback to us and or the council during the public hearing period, which would be, you know, late fall, and get some of these things kind of on the record. But in the meantime, we've, you know, we'll sort of jot down what we've heard and get the minutes and make that part of the record as well.
I think that'd be helpful. I don't know that you necessarily have to, I would probably route something to staff, and then staff can kind of act as a filter whether it seems like it's appropriate to get it sent out to us. But okay, I'd coordinate with Tim.
Okay.
And then,
good, thanks.
You know, at that point, I think they can make a good call of when it might be good to kind of loop back around with great, this organization. So, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.